Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Good Thursday afternoon and welcome into Grant and Danny. It's January 9th, 2025. We're 2 days away from NFL playoff football and 3 days away from the Commanders and the Bucks in Tampa to kick off Washington's attempt to make a postseason run. As we welcome everybody in, I want to remind everybody, Danny, we've got a field trip Friday tomorrow.
Tomorrow!
We're going to be in Arlington for the first time this season on our field trip tour. We're in Clarendon at Hyde Social from 2 to 6:30. Live show, great food, cold, delicious beverages, and plenty of fellowship.
I have heard good things about old Hyde Social. You and I will be there live and in color, in person, consuming foodstuffs, high-fiving, and bantering about matters of sport. Most specifically, your local Washington 53.
It's a football Friday.
Yep.
During a field trip, that's kind of what we like to do. The Beltway Blitz at 4 today, going to cover some of the other teams in town outside of just the Commanders, but at that time, at 4 in 2 hours, we're giving away Caps tickets. We got a pair in the good seats to face the to a game where they're facing the Penguins, so if you want to go to that game, you'd better be listening. Speaking of being at Caps games, had a blast last night at Capital One Arena. Washington stole a game. They got outshot 31-19, I believe it was, and they still found a way in overtime to get a win thanks to young legs, you know, like the older brothers Capitals that they've always been, where in overtime, their young guy skates faster than everybody else and makes a play. Alexi Protas going to the net, little loop around, great pass to PLD.
Little PLD.
Pierre-Luc Dubois, who had his second goal of the game. But the locals win. That's what they do. They're the best team in the Eastern Conference and one of the best teams in hockey. So if you want to see them, like I did last night in person, and it's a great atmosphere, everything smells like popcorn all over the arena, you got to be listening at 4.
Were you able to see the action from your seats?
I could, like, actually. Did
you have a good view, unobstructed?
No, really good seats last night.
Anybody in front of you?
Only the players.
Only the players.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some ice and Alex Ovechkin. That was about it. Enjoyed myself.
Yeah. When you stand up and reach out, that, like, you extend your hand. Like, yeah. Let's pretend you're pass blocking, right? Without retreating. You're doing the engaged pass blocking.
Okay.
So in other words, like, there's a defensive end in front of you. You got to get your hands on him right away. If you extended your hand, what would you hit?
Am I leaning back or am I kind of leaning forward?
Leaning forward, you're getting in that punch. You're engaging first.
There's going to be glass.
Glass right there. Yeah. You smacked that glass, didn't you?
It was a good night for me.
Yeah, it was.
I enjoyed it. But I really, the whole point was to see them win. And I got to do that.
Yes, but you got a great view of it.
Really good one.
Really good view.
We'll take that.
Really good view.
Great show today. Patrick Peterson, the longtime excellent defensive back, joins us to preview the playoffs, which he was a part of many times. That's at 3 o'clock. John Keim of ESPN.com in town wrote a story on Cliff Kingsbury and him falling back in love with football, him suggesting it's going to be really hard to leave Jaden Daniels, which was great to hear, I would say. We're going to talk to Keim about that at 5. And Devin McCourty, not Jason McCourty, although he looks a lot like Jason McCourty.
Mm-hmm.
But this is Devin McCourty.
Devin McCourty.
One of them works at CBS. One of them works at NBC. I don't know which one's which, but one of them will be on the show today. I'm being told it's the one that works at NBC. It's Devin McCourty.
As we've clearly stated from the beginning.
Jason McCourty is not on the show.
Devin is.
Devin McCourty's
Devin
on the
McCourty.
Show. They could, like, I swear to this, they could. They could just show up at the other person's office and do their work that day, and no one on set would know the difference.
I think so.
Not every twin, even identical twin, can do that, but I know they could do it.
Yeah, like the Barber twins. I don't think they could do that. Rondé and Tiki. I don't think they could. I don't think they could swap.
I know the difference between those two when I look at them.
Mm-hmm.
Not Jason and
not
Devin.
The McCourty brothers.
Is it because I'm not as familiar with them?
That's for me. That's probably what it is. Like if I spent years every day with both of those guys, I might have a shot. I don't.
Dad, would you mind printing us a side by side of the McCourtys so we could get a good look at this?
Let's play. Which McCourty is this?
Name that McCourty. But he's on the show today at 6. He's a great NFL analyst, and we're excited to have him on for the first time. Thanks to the people that got him on the show over at NBC.
WNBC. Listen, Thomas, do it just like Miss Thomas does.
Try it again.
I sounds like I'm doing it like the way you want me to. WNBC.
A little less N.
WNBC.
A little longer.
WNBC.
Just like that. That's the one. So looking forward to seeing Devin McCourty on our hotline. That will be cool. But I'm fired up. And how about that quote that John Keim got from Cliff Kingsbury? It's going to be hard to leave this kid.
That is the headline. Isn't that for everybody? That should have been.
Yeah, I mean, it was in the last kind of section of the story, but it is the headline. It's what you tweet out.
Yeah, it was like, oh, by the way.
It's the whole point. He's like, and it's what we kept saying, by the way, but me saying it or you and me guessing it is different than him coming out and saying
the words.
I fell back in love with football this year. I had the most fun I've had as a coach since I was in college at Texas Tech. And also, I really like working with Jaden Daniels. And it's going to take something pretty impressive.
Pretty seismic.
To pry me away from just continuing to make sweet music with this excellent musician.
Yeah, and that thing may not just be the Raiders' job. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to take something pretty special, and it may not just be whatever is open and available. Again, the circumstances for Kingsbury are unique. We've gone over them. Getting paid as a head coach through 2027. Also getting paid, double dip in the chip, as an assistant coach, coordinator, whatever you want to call it, for an offense that's a lot of fun, for a quarterback that has brought his joy of football back. So, yeah, I mean, it would take something perfect to pry him away, and I don't know that that exists.
The Raiders, speaking of that job, as we were coming on the air about 8 minutes ago, fired their general manager, Tom Telesco. That makes him the third GM to get fired since the end of the season here. So there'll be an opening both for a GM and a head coach in Vegas. And I'm seeing a lot of pushback and people going, you got to be kidding me. You know, he had 1 year and drafted a pretty impressive draft class led by Brock Bowers, who had arguably the most impressive rookie season ever. I'm not saying he should win the Rookie of the Year award because quarterback's harder to play and Jaden Daniels should win that award going away. But Brock Bowers did something at tight end, the likes of which no rookie tight end has ever done before.
He's exceptional.
Shattered records at that position. And Telesco, I don't know that that was like some steal of a pick. It feels like Bowers kind of fell into their lap, but put together a pretty good draft class. But I believe that you should be hiring a GM and a head coach together. So I'm going to be in the minority on this. The Raiders are going to get killed for firing Pierce, waiting, and now firing Telesco, and for firing a GM that has a decent track record in his 1 year there. Sorry. I want the GM coming in with the head coach, see Peters and Quinn, you know, see Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell. You need those guys on the same page. You need them to be basically arm-in-arm in everything that they do. That working relationship's huge. And the big storyline, the underlying theme here is, this is now Tom Brady's operation in a lot of ways. Remember, he is a minority owner, but he has the ear of the guy with the terrible haircut.
Mark Davis. He has the ear of the guy with the bad hair.
Mark Davis looks like a villain in like a Bond film. Tom Brady is, for this moment, kind of the acting general manager.
Mm-hmm.
We've already heard he's going to be instrumental in their hiring process, that he's one of the most influential voices in, you know, what they were doing for the head coach. Well, now he's looking for a GM. And he's looking for a head coach. And for some reason still, no one has a problem with this. I'm the only one that thinks this is weird. He just keeps calling games on Fox while he runs one of the 32 teams. Very strange to me, but that's where we are. So Brady's going to help try to find the GM and the head coach. He's basically like the team president right now.
Yeah, so it's strange. If you can fire a guy after 1 year, then it tells you your process wasn't great, right? You had a pretty good sample of who Telesco was with all his years as the Chargers GM. I don't remember how many it was exactly. Was it 8 or 9? He was in charge of that Chargers operation. So if you can say, you know what, he wasn't the dude, then it tells you that the way you went about it probably wasn't right or whatever. I mean, who knows what the criteria were.
You could say the same about Gerard Mayo, one and done. You could say the same about Antonio Pierce, one and done as a head coach, too.
For sure. I mean, but the guy that's making those decisions, ostensibly, you know, the general manager talking about the coach. This is the going to set your organizational tone for some time. They didn't like it this year. So I don't know. It just tells you that they're not tremendously well run. Even if ultimately this is the right call, it's like that broken clock is right twice a day type situation. I'm not going to the mat for Telesco as like some genius that's been misunderstood or then his next opportunity is going to be perfect. He got a pretty good track record. There's a lot of around 500 or worse. 1-12 win season on his resume, putting together a pretty good roster. But other than that, I mean, it's there's nothing exceptional there.
I can't tell the difference between the McCourtys.
Okay.
Darris just handed us some printed off sheets.
I'm going to show them to the YouTube chat super quick.
If you're on 106.7 The Fan's YouTube page, we're holding up pictures of the McCourtys. How on earth could anyone possibly tell the difference? Like, I have cousins that are twins.
Yeah.
And I was a grown adult, 30-plus years old, and I just kind of go in for the hug and say, Merry Christmas, because it's like, unless they're both in the room, I can't really tell you who's who. They're on that level to me.
So I thought I knew based on one of the picks, because Devin played for the Patriots, right? Devin's the Patriot.
Well, they're wearing jerseys.
But that's what I'm saying. So I'm taking Devin, who's the Patriot, and I'll go, oh, I'll look for that guy in the other picture.
Jason was also a Patriot.
Damn it.
But not only that.
So who played for the Dolphins?
I think you're missing the point of the exercise.
No, I'm trying to explain this. So I was like, okay, I'll take the guy in the Patriots jersey. If I know who that is, I'll look at him in the other picture and be able to tell, and I can't. You follow me? So I'm going, I'll take this guy, and I'll say, who is he in this picture? And I don't know.
Right, that's
Do you follow what I'm saying?
Point. Yeah. So you're agreeing that you can't tell them apart?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I feel like that's what we're saying.
Okay. That's what we're saying. We're saying that. So who played for the Dolphins?
I'd imagine that would be Jason.
Jason played for the
Dolphins.
Devin
was like Patriot do or die all his career.
Mm-hmm.
Jason just happened to also play for the Patriots.
Okay.
But Darris could have put two Jasons on here.
Did you put two Jasons?
To really screw with us.
What a...
And wouldn't that be funny?
What a mega villain move that would be.
I kind of wish I did now, but I did not do that. No, that is Devin in the Patriots uniform. That is Jason in the Dolphins uniform.
So can I get a confirmation on this, please, that it's not a lack of familiarity where we've seen more of Tiki and Rondé. These two people are just identical.
They're just identical twins. They are literally identical.
Can you tell the difference?
I think Jason has a little bit skinnier of a skull. If that sounds right.
See, I was going to go the opposite.
So I actually.
So in that picture, I think it's Jason on the right and Devin on the left.
Okay. See, I had it back. I had the exact opposite.
I could be wrong though. How could I know? How could you possibly know? They're identical.
Wow. Twins are weird, man.
Wouldn't it be wild if there was just another you?
The twin thing is a show.
Like Greg Paulson is just jogging around somewhere. And everyone's like, Grant. And like, no, it's Greg.
So here's the craziest thing, though.
Okay.
Let me see if I could say this correctly. Because I saw this on one of these weird documentaries about crimes that I like to watch. So if you're identical twins, and this has happened before, and you marry identical twins, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm with you so far, yeah.
This happens like more than you think.
Because it's like you empathize.
It's not like three times on the globe right now. It's like hundreds, right?
No, which I get. So like you have this unique experience that no one can relate to except for someone else that's just like you.
So the two dude identical twins marry the two chick identical twins.
Totally.
Their kids have the exact same DNA. So if your kid commits a murder, my kid could be arrested for it.
Same fingerprints?
That I don't know. I'm referring strictly to the
DNA. The DNA part. So in other words, if your murderous kid, right, leaves, I don't know, saliva behind, or I'm just thinking of a weird scenario, and they swab it, and then they pick up my kid.
I'll make my kid the bad guy.
Yeah, your kid's the bad guy. Your murdering kid.
My kid breaks in, and they find a piece of hair in the apartment.
Right. It's the same as mine.
It comes back to your kid too.
That insane.
Isn't that wacky?
It's so insane.
I mean, what are we doing here?
That's going to be somebody's defense at one point. Some Hail Mary deal where it's like, I have a long-lost identical twin. It wasn't me. It was him. Until you can find him, I should be let free.
I would say, okay.
All right.
Because it's just that whack. But, Devin McCourty. I'm sure he's been asked about being a twin, so we shouldn't just make the whole interview about that. But it has piqued my interest, I will admit.
Okay.
Commanders have some weaknesses we've been addressing to try to get ahead of this, ahead of the Bucs game. They got to iron some things out. I want to open up the MGM National Harbor listener lines for our audience today for the first time on this. Of their biggest weaknesses, which we've discussed, tell me if there's anything else we need to add to this. I would say it's four categories right now.
Mm-hmm.
Running the ball has been a problem on offense.
Yes.
Stopping the run has been a problem on defense. Their secondary, and specifically their corners matching up with wide receivers, has been a major dilemma. And then the last thing I'm throwing in, I think I'm probably harping on this more than most people are lately, is pass protection.
Is recent pass pro, sure, yeah.
Sacks are going up, pressures are going up, those types of things. If those are the four weaknesses, I want to know from people, what do you feel the best about not hurting them and the worst about costing them dearly? So your confidence level in one of these things not actually rearing its head, they'll do well in that area this week. Which of the four? And then you go, no matter what happens, that's going to be a problem. They're just going to have to overcome it. 800-636-1067. Does the question make sense?
It makes sense. So to me, they're all problems. And how well they do against those problems will determine, I think, how this game goes in a lot of ways. But the only thing they've shown to me the ability to do over the last couple of months is when they decide you're not running anymore, they've been able to do something about it. Now, I know the running, I'm aware of the, I saw Bijan Robinson. I saw Saquon Barkley. I saw the same things you guys did. But all I'm asking is for you to acknowledge that even after Saquon Barkley had 110 yards in the first quarter, he had 40 after that, basically, on 20 carries.
What if I say to you, yeah, but that's because Kenny Pickett came in?
Totally, that's exactly what happened. They decided, no more running. We're not scared of anything else. Whenever they've decided we're going to commit all in to stopping the run, they've done that. Alvin Kamara, Barkley for the final three quarters, etc. Now, they've been vulnerable everywhere else.
Why didn't they do that against the Falcons when all they pretty much had was Bijan Robinson running buck wild?
Because they knew how vulnerable their other members of the secondary were, whether it's Davis, St. Juiced, or Benjamin St. Davis, or Michael St. Juiced. None of those guys could cover. Drake London went ham. Mooney was going nuts. Whoever they wanted to throw to, they could throw to. They could not prevent the pass. Whenever they've turned up the fader, not whenever, but they've only shown the ability at times to slow down elite running backs and slow down running games. They haven't shown the ability to do anything else. They can't run it. I don't think they can protect without being able to run it. And hopefully this offensive line is healthy enough, but who knows there, to be able to pass pro. When they're like, okay, we're going to try to stop the pass, I don't think they can. The only thing they've shown the ability to do, not every time, sometimes, is shut down running games to some degree.
Okay, so you're going with, if one of these four major problems doesn't rear its head, it will be Bucky Irving doesn't really get going or get off because they decide we're going to dare Baker Mayfield.
Which is, I wouldn't do this.
And his 4,000 yards and 40 touchdowns to beat us.
So what I'm saying is, maybe I'm going to answer the question properly. The only thing they can take away if they want to is that.
Okay.
I don't think that's going to be their strategy. I think they're going to live with getting killed in the run game in the hopes of not giving up big touchdown plays.
But that's the one you're worrying least about.
Yeah, that's the one I'm by far and away least worried about.
Okay. For me, it would be pass protection. And I will just say that they move the pocket, that Jaden Daniels avoids sacks and gets out of the pocket and runs wild. I actually think Jaden Daniels is going to lead the team in rushing yards in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't be shocked if he led the team in rushing attempts. The last time they were in Tampa Bay, he ran 16 times, which is way too many. But what you see a lot of times from clubs with running quarterbacks is that when you get into the playoffs, you turn up that dial. Because now the games mean a little bit more. You go
do or
to,
die, yeah.
You go to your strengths, and it's kind of like, there is no next week. We don't really need to focus as much on his health and whatever else. I think there could be 7, 8, 9 designed runs for Jaden Daniels, maybe 10 in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And then the guy that scrambled 25 more times than any other player in the league, you add in 5 or 6 scrambles, this could be a 15 to 18 carry game. Like, that would not shock me at all for Jaden Daniels. So I think some of that mobility, athleticism, leaving the pocket, maybe helps cut down on some of the pass pro issues. Doesn't mean they're not going to get pressure, get home, or push the pocket. It just means, I think, instead of a 6 or 7 sack game, maybe it's 2 or 3. They were disruptive, but it leads to a bunch more rushing yards, let's say, from Jaden Daniels. So that would be the one of the major flaws with the team that I think doesn't cost them as dearly in this game. The flip side is, which area do you feel most nervous about? And we can get into that next. But we'll also open up the phones at 800-636-1067. That's 800-636-1067 on the MGM National Harbor listener lines. We've got four flaws we're pointing out here: running the ball, stopping the run, the corners against wide receivers, and pass protection. Where are you feeling best and worst going into this Bucs matchup? That's what we want to know on Grant and Danny on The Fan. He's Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. Tomorrow, we are out and about.
Hyde Social, Clarendon, come see your pals. Food, folks, and fun, dare I say. We'll be hanging out, talking about the local foosball team. You know, the 12-win team that's going to the playoffs, like we always do around here. It's going to be a blast, man.
Of the four fatal flaws that could catch up to them that we've been addressing this week that need to be amended as they go forward into the second season here, what are you most confident in not rearing its head against the Bucs? And what are you scared of costing them dearly? 800-636-1067. I think the thing they can actually make not be a problem, because they did it for the majority of the first 3 months of the season, is pass protection, where either by way of Daniels' athleticism, him helping by getting the ball out faster, Kingsbury helping coach around a bit of a deficiency right now with the quick game and how he calls the game, I think they can mask that problem by their own doing. You know, they could just go in and say, we will not allow this to hurt us, and they can make sure that doesn't happen. So I think they can be okay in the way of pass pro, especially because even though Tampa Bay's got those monsters in the middle, and Vita Vea and Kalijah Kancey are going to collapse the pocket, and they're going to ruin a play or two in the passing game, no doubt. But they don't really have edge rushers that scary a whole lot. Although I will say, did anybody see Yaya Diaby's performance this past week? They stood him up coming off the edge. He was one of the top defensive players in the sport. He had four TFLs, and he had four hits on the quarterback. He was immensely disruptive, just in time to go into this matchup.
Yeah, isn't that nice they found something?
Which is unfortunate.
I mean, to me, it's less about, you know, having a TJ Watt or somebody on it as a defensive end that can go one-on-one. It's where's the next blitz coming from? It could be that guy. It could be Levante David. It could be a member of the secondary. It could be someone off the bench. Someone we don't even know about. That's what they do. Todd Bowles is here to hunt your quarterback and hit him, please and thank you. That's my biggest concern when it comes to that. Not necessarily an individual pass rusher, but them pass rushing.
What is the thing that you can't see them correcting and think ends up hurting them a lot?
They're talking about Washington's inability to run the ball. I think everything's predicated off of that. So it's going to be, in my opinion, hey, Jaden, sorry to bother you. Could you just fix all this? Could you just, you know, put on some Spanx and some vertical stripes and get in some flattering light and make us look good?
They couldn't run the ball in the last month, and they've won every week.
Yeah, because Daniels has put a Superman cape on.
Why can't he do that again?
He can.
The Bucs have been awful against running quarterbacks.
That's their chance. I don't see them being able to run the ball at all, and they're going to leave it up to Jaden Daniels. Whether it's a bad start, they get behind, which you don't want to live that way, but they have. Whether it's penalties, which this officiating crew calls a ton of, you're going to get behind. Not a way to live. They're going to basically have to say, again, Jaden, so sorry to bug you, fix all of our problems. It's going to be an issue, and I think their chance to win is him.
Not one of my biggest concerns, only because it's been bad and they keep winning. So they can win even when they're not running the ball. They've proven it, because Daniels will run the ball. Like, the traditional running game with tailbacks is where they've struggled, and Daniels running for 75 or 80 makes that okay when you go 15 for 50 or whatever, 15 for, let's say, 39 with your running backs in a bad performance. Where I'm nervous, Danny, and where I just think this thing is going to be ugly for them is the thing you don't feel as bad about. I think they will get run on by Tampa Bay. This is a top five rushing offense in the league. They've been better in the last 7-8 weeks than they were at any point this season. The way Bucky Irving runs, I think, is going to be problematic for
them.
The
run game is good.
He's shifty. He's also physical. When he gets tired, they've got a second back who's been their starter the last couple of years they can bring in who can be effective as well. I think they're going to be able to run the ball and will run the ball very effectively against the Commanders. And when you can throw the ball like the Bucs can, especially in the high red zone, 40-plus touchdowns this year for Mayfield, that's scary, because now I'm committing resources to try to stop the run, and I'm giving up one-on-one matchups on the exterior, on the outside here. Not fun. Let's go to Fred in Bristow, who wants to hop in. You can call us at 800-636-1067. What's up, Fred?
Hey, Grant, Danny. Thank you for taking my call.
Hey, buddy.
I'll tell you, I think the thing that would hopefully be the easiest to correct, and if they don't, will cost them dearly, is going to be the penalties. And I think a lot of what happens in this game is going to be based on penalties, because the more he scrambles, the more chance there is somebody's going to get held. And so even though he makes a great pass or a touchdown or whatever, it gets called back because of a holding. So if they can stop doing that, I think we'll have a much greater chance of doing well in this game.
We actually talked about penalties a little bit based on a call a day or two ago. I don't really know why, but it is irrefutable. In the last few games of the season, Danny, they certainly did commit a bunch more penalties than they were early in the year. Any hypothesis as to why that is?
Yeah, when you're at a disadvantage, you commit penalties. Now, some of that is procedural stuff where they shoot themselves in the foot, where you know you don't line up right, you don't get the plan on time, or something happens. That's kind of your own, whether it's lack of focus, you're tired, there's not a lot of continuity on offense as guys have been subbed in and out, and you've had offensive linemen injured, and Eckler's missing time, et cetera. So maybe that's part of it. But to me, when you're beat, that's when you commit a penalty. That's pass interference. That's illegal use of the hands. Then on offense, that's your hold. That's your whatever.
But to be clear, then why in they had a 5-game winning streak? Why at the end of the year were they committing more than at the beginning?
I think just what I was saying. There, you've had a lot of subs come in. You were less healthy than you were before, and people figured you out to a degree, right? There's no great answer there. There's no like left tackle that's coming back walking through that door that's awesome. There's no all pro right guard or left guard that's coming through the door. It's guys that were okay to begin with. They're probably punching above their weight class with now schemes and things that everyone else has figured out. That's why it's more to me about an individual player matchup time than it is about scheme.
I guess looking at the numbers, and I didn't realize this, they did have 10 penalties in week 2 against the Giants, a bad team. It's 7 in week 1 against the Bucs. So
remember all those against the Giants. They get the red zone, and then it's false start, right? Delay a game, illegal procedure, illegal shift.
17 penalties in their first two games. Mm-hmm. 18 in their final two games. So about comparable. Now, the difference is, from that Bengals game through the middle of the year, they really didn't commit many. They were one of the best in the league in a stretch. 3 penalties, 5 penalties, 5 penalties. They had a couple of 3-penalty games later in the year. But lately, 7 against the Titans. That was a game they dominated. 8 against the Cowboys, key in their loss. 9 against the Saints that killed them on the road that day. They had 13 against the Falcons. 13 penalties,
yep.
A season high against Atlanta. And I guess good for them, only 5 against the Cowboys. But some of those were very early in that game, obviously. Clearly something they've got to clean up, because they just don't have the talent,
right,
to overcome all of those. But enough about the things that they're not doing well. We are going to talk a lot today about some of the things that they're doing at a very high level. What do you feel best about going into the playoffs? Take Daniels out of the equation, because I know you've referenced the Daniels and O kind of December. Mm-hmm. What areas of their game overall collectively, non-Daniels, do you like right now a lot?
I like that Eckler's coming back. And I think I don't think we're spending enough time or energy focusing on the impact he can have. I know there have been great offensive totals in games without him when he's been banged up a couple times. But to me, when it comes to winning time, now it's everybody's good. It's not, you don't have Arizona when they're down, or Tennessee or Carolina when they're playing for next year. This is now winning time. And you need a player like that can take the pressure off, can be the pressure release valve, that can turn things that are negative into positive. Not quite like Daniels does. I mean, he's so special. But Eckler, well, I think, will help in the run game. He's going to help tremendously in the pass game. He'll be an extension of the run game with some of the short stuff turned into medium things. I mean, right now, if it's 4th and goal from the 5 to go win the football game, he's one of my 3 options that I would feel great about. Him, Ertz, and McLaurin. And having that one extra thing where you could get him on the linebacker, the little arrow route or a choice route or something out of the backfield or whatever, when you've got to go somewhere, I include him in that group. I mean, maybe you could scheme some up for somebody else, but that's one of those, say they have a replay of that Dallas game right at the end, right, where it's winning time right now, this minute, you got one play. He's one of the 3 guys I would really trust to do that. I think that's huge for him to come back in time.
I love any matchup with McLaurin against this Bucs secondary, which is beleaguered. I mean, this is a kind of an injury-riddled group that's given up a lot of big plays as the year's gone on, because they just haven't been right in the back end. You saw Bryce Young have, I thought, the best game maybe of his career here recently at the end of the season in short order against this team. But I'm looking at the passing metrics. They're 29th defensively this year in terms of what they give up per game, 244. They're actually middle of the pack, 15th in yards per play. But I like McLaurin to go get 7-8 catches. And I do think Daniels is going to have what he wants in the short passing game. I think this is going to look a lot like that Atlanta game. One of those like 25 of 33. ADOT's going to be lower. It's going to be out of the backfield, short 5, 7, 8, 9 yard range. But they're going to give you a ton of completions and then rally and try to tackle. And those games have been really kind to Daniels because he gets in these rhythms. He's like a sharpshooter.
Yep.
Where, he's 6 of 8, 7 of 9, 8 of 11. Next thing you know, he's 14 of 18 passing or 14 of 17 passing, and he's starting to drop the ball in the bucket down the field as well because he's in the flow. Shane's in Bulgaria on Grant and Danny listening on the Odyssey app. Shane, just like we always thought, brother, at the end of this year we'd be talking about playoff football.
Yeah, exactly is what we thought, right? We said that, 2 years ago?
Love it.
I hope you guys had a good holidays, man. Seriously, you and your families, all seriousness, I hope y'all had a great time.
You too, buddy.
And got some R&R. That's what I'm doing now, getting some R&R. Hey, look, here's the thing. Number one, we are overachieved what we've done. So we in this area should be thankful right now we won 12 games. Let's call it what it is. Number two, I don't think we're going to stop the run. I'm with you, Grant. Commander, I agree with you, too. I think Brian Robinson, look, here's the thing. I don't know if Robinson's lost a step or is he completely done, but if you look at him a month ago, he's not the same guy. I don't know if it's an injury, but I don't think he wants to be here. I don't know where he's at, but we got to run the football. And I'm still, our secondary is still up in arms, man. It's still a question mark. It has been all year. Even with Lattimore, if he plays, so far this trade's not looking out, in my opinion, as what we thought it was going to be.
Super early.
Because the guy can't get on the field.
Super early. I mean,
they traded
for him largely for the next 2 years, and whatever you got the rest of the way is a bonus. But, yeah, if he doesn't help them much or if they get eliminated and he plays poorly in this first playoff game, it's off to a bad start.
Yeah, early returns aren't good. Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. And what he does in the future is going to be what we remember, I think, about this trade. As far as B-Rob, I don't question if he wants to be here or any of those things, even his health. We can find out after the year, I guess, potentially. He's got something going on. To me, they've had a lot of injuries up front. And I just think that he is a volume rusher. And they haven't had enough success to get him the volume early in the games. Most of the time, you're not going to have your first carry go untouched for 40 yards for a touchdown like that Titans game. It's a slow burn, a build-up kind of thing where, if you think about it, like, I didn't think they tried to run that much in the Cowboys game. I don't have that in front of me. I tweeted it out, but it was something like 13 of their first 17 plays were pass plays. I'm not killing Cliff for that. I have no problems with that, but it wasn't like they came out and even tried to run the ball. It's kind of like he punted on the idea.
Yeah, you wonder if like the ghost of the first matchup happened where they couldn't run it at all and are going, okay, maybe this is the way we'll catch him off guard. I mean, that didn't work either.
Which head coach coaching in the first round of the playoffs do you trust the most and least? What about quarterbacks that'll be on the field Saturday through Monday in the NFL? Who do we trust the tops of the list and then at the very bottom of that ranking? We'll get to that next. Grant and Danny on The Fan. Big day for corporate Clary. He just found out that he's getting a work laptop.
Unbelievable. Climbing that corporate ladder, suckling up to all the bigwigs, and now he gets a laptop to spy on us?
Darius, how long you worked at this company? When did you start at Odyssey?
I started at Odyssey in 2015.
2015, so that's 10 years ago.
And when did you get your laptop?
So I never got one.
Oh.
Have you ever been corporate?
No, I've never been corporate. I've always been local, D.C.
You're doing it wrong, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Clary's been corporate for a week. He's getting a laptop.
48 hours equals laptop.
Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan, taking you up to 6:30 tomorrow, our Friday field trip out at Hyde Social. 4 o'clock today, we're giving away Caps tickets. Make sure you're listening. That's an hour and 15 minutes from right now. All right, let's look ahead to the playoff weekend. It waits to get going on Saturday. Let's go head coach that you trust the most in this first round to make the right decisions.
There could be a number of guys that I would say fit this bill. Like a lot of guys that I like a lot, that I trust the most. Despite the fact that his decision the last week of the regular season was controversial, I trust me some Sean McVay. That guy, his hand never shakes. There's no moment too big for him. He has already been to the pinnacle, been to the mountaintop as like a teenager, basically. He's got everything in order. He will have his group prepared, ready to go. He'll make the right decision, whether it's clock management, whether it's punt, fourth down, whatever. In crunch time, he will know what to do. I trust me some Sean McVay.
I'm actually leaning toward the other coach in that game, believe it or not, and the likely coach of the year.
Little KOC?
Kevin O'Connell. I think he is tremendous in late game sequences. Look at the Vikings' record. Two of the last 3 years, when they've been atop their division and atop the conference. Remember a few years ago when they won 13 with Cousins? I think they were like 9-0 in one possession game. Same kind of deal this year for the Vikings. I'm leaning in that direction, but I'll go off the board a little bit. Let's go Jim Harbaugh of the Chargers.
That was my two seed, honestly.
Winner, yeah. Man. He's a hurricane. He's not really for me. He rubs me the wrong way. I don't love the bravado and a lot of the nonsense. But I think if you're in that locker room, you can't help but want to do the shtick. You want to yell back when he says, who's got it better than us? Nobody at the top of your lungs. When he says, let's do three cheers, you want to yell hip, hip, hooray. When he says, let's sing for who's a jolly good fellow and lift up the kicker, you want to go grab the kicker by the legs and put him over your head and start shouting. I mean, it is some wacky, like childish type stuff, but they get all in his programs. I think Jim Harbaugh is a guy I would trust to make the right call this weekend. If you find out that a coach botched something terribly and cost his team a game, who do you think it would be?
So this is one of my favorite people on the planet and one of my favorite coaches in the NFL. But Mike Tomlin, he's got a bad record when it comes to these sorts of things, these late game management moments, these timeout management moments. There have been some snafus that you kind of can't ignore. He's got flaws, certainly, but again, one of my favorite head coaches of all time, and I would take him sight unseen right now, this minute, to run just about anything in this country, anything that needs fixing. I would send Mike Tomlin to fix it. But there's a game management.
I hope it's not the Steelers' offense.
Yeah, but I was going
to
say
he's failed to do that for about 15 years.
He's needed a different coordinator many times over, or make a quarterback decision. But it honestly is he's one of my favorites. But Mike Tomlin.
Yeah, I love Mike Tomlin. So my runner-up's going to be Sean McDermott of the Buffalo Bills. He's had a couple of those where you just kind of scratch your head.
What are you doing, Sean?
You go, really, dude?
What are you doing?
You've been at this too long to not be able to figure this whole thing out. But I'm going to go with Todd Bowles. Second round of the playoffs last year. Do you remember? The Bucs had blown out the Eagles.
Yep.
They got to the second round against Detroit, and he had some of the worst clock management this side of Raheem Morris against Washington. It was so bad.
I'd forgotten that.
And it was kind of like, what is happening? Give your team a chance to finish this game, please. I just can't stop remembering that. It's not going to leave my mind, and it actually is one of the reasons that I got the fingers crossed and feel okay about the Commanders. Because I think both things are true. Bowles has done a good job this year. And in-game, in those sequences where there's no margin for error, you got to be right. I just don't think he's had a great grasp on those types of situations. Although, it's not like Washington's running circles around people with clock management when they're burning timeouts. That's been a problem around here for a few weeks that luckily hasn't really cost them all that dearly.
I 100% agree. There seems to also be just league-wide a different paradigm about clock stoppage, and maybe there's some sort of analytical white paper that went around that I don't know about, but nobody seems to want to spike the ball. Nobody seems to want to hurry up and you know, stop the clock or when to use the timeouts. Everyone seems to be doing it in a different way than I'm used to, so maybe I'm the one that's weird.
So we're choosing between 12 quarterbacks here. Quarterback you trust the most this weekend, quarterback that you trust the least this weekend. Just to rattle off the names, Justin Herbert, C.J. Stroud, Russell Wilson, Lamar Jackson, Bo Nix, Josh Allen, Jordan Love banged up, Jalen Hurts banged up, Jaden Daniels, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Matt Stafford.
So this is a strange list. The guy I trust the most is based on the opponent. It's actually Baker Mayfield. I don't think Washington's defense is any good. I think they can't stop this passing game. And I think Baker Mayfield has a nice day.
Well, let me be clear.
Mm-hmm.
You trust the guy that led the league in interceptions and turnover-worthy plays the
sure
most.
Do. Against the team that can't turn it over or can't get turnovers consistently. So, to me, that's my one answer. The guy I trust the least is Russell Wilson and that Pittsburgh offense.
Yeah, we have different ideas of trust. I'm not going to go with the guy that puts the ball in harm's way the most in the league. I will roll with, Lamar. will be where I'll start with trust the most. Him and Lamar, Josh Allen probably side by side. I'll go with Allen. Allen has the lowest turnovers in the league, lowest sack percentage in the league this year, lower interception rate than Lamar Jackson this year. So I'll say Josh Allen 1, Lamar 2 in that category. Who do I trust the least is interesting. Stroud's been struggling. Both of the QBs in the Packers-Eagles game aren't quite healthy. Sam Darnold's coming off a complete dud. And yet, we'll go with Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
Russell Wilson, it's been a rough go of it. I mean, a month ago, it was almost a lock. It felt like he was going back to Pittsburgh. Felt like a really good decision.
Like it was the answer.
And I think they did the right thing. In hindsight, I was wrong about sticking with Justin Fields over Russell Wilson. But that said, I don't think he'll be their starter in week one next year. I think they're back in the quarterback market again.
They might be. Yeah.
My guess is he struggles, and they lose a fairly tight football game that if they had a better quarterback, they'd win. I like them to cover the 10 or so points that they're getting against the Ravens.
So looking at this, the guys in terms of trust the most, the two best players are the two MVP finalists, obviously, right? It's Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen have had the best years. I'm just looking at the opponents, right? Thinking about Denver, whose defense is excellent. So I don't know how great a day Josh Allen has. This may be a rock fight up there in the cold of Buffalo. And something happens with Baltimore playoffs, no Zay Flowers, an opponent that's really familiar with them. I could see Pittsburgh making this into an AFC North arm wrestling match as well. I think not having Flowers will be key for Baltimore. So actually, I'm with you in terms of Pittsburgh covering.
Grant and Danny on the Fan in about a half hour at 3:25. Patrick Peterson is going to be joining us. One of our Odyssey NFL insiders, former tremendous defensive back, will get his thoughts on all the playoff matchups. Next, let's get you a Commanders stock report as we get ready for playoff football. You're listening to The Fan.